accession number 22065, reel 9.
Derek Avey, Dennis Avey, reel 9.
He said, I said, whilst in Auschwitz, I saw a copy, I read a copy of an SS headquarters edict. This came from a newspaper I managed to get, a German newspaper. It was the Beobachter Zeitung. And they reported this edict in detail. And this is what it read. When we achieve ultimate victory, all British POWs will be executed. We shall invade England and all males between 16 and 65 will be transported to Europe to rebuild the ruined cities. We shall exterminate all females over childbearing age. We shall govern the country from Whitehall, and our victorious soldiers will be allowed to impregnate all suitable females with good Aryan blood. That was the rough translation. It went on and on and on, but I couldn't cut it out of the paper, obviously, for two or three reasons. In that, if it had been caught on me at all, with me, so I learnt it more or less. And this, I kept it in here. But I had an awful lot of information that I put down subsequent to the war that I kept in a valise, and unfortunately, we were robbed shortly after the war, and the valise was stolen. And in it, there was so much vital information, never mind about anything else. And a lot of it I've obviously forgotten, unhappily. But there it is.
You remembered an awful lot, though, Dennis, and that's what we're grateful for. Now, how about your liberation?
Well, as I say, we could hear the guns. The Russian guns.
And you were saying you had a lot of bombing up until...
Lot of bombing. The air age, well, for want of a better word, the air age shelter was bombed absolutely. Then subsequently all our barracks, whatever, were bombed completely. And we lost all our outer garments, God knows what, we lost all the... Then in January, mid or towards the end of January, we were then force marched, and it was cold. It was snowing the whole time. And the whole route was punctuated with dead bodies of political prisoners. No end of them. For miles upon miles upon miles. Until they finally run out. But we did pretty well. Very little food again. But we kept going and that was it. And every now and again after about 15, 20 miles, I suppose there were people ahead that were detailing barns and what have you, and stables and what have you, and these were put into. Now, we were great schemers on top of everything else, and these barns are obviously associated with farms 9 times out of 10, and we managed to get potatoes and raw potatoes and stuff like that, and this is it. And this is how we kept going.
What sort of clothing were you wearing on that march?
Not a great coat. Fortunately, I had a good pair of boots. Fortunately.
Were you marching Apart from the politicals,
Yes. They went ahead of us. We were the last to be pulled out, I think. I think they were using us as possibly, I don't know. They could be holding us up to ransom or whatever. Not that the Russians would have bothered. They'd have shot us as well. That's the attitude of the Russians those days. They didn't stop for anything. And oddly enough, they never went into Birkenau at all. Never touched it. They went past it. They never touched it. And that was it. And this went on for... It went through Poland, Sudetenland, the old Sudetenland, Czechoslovakia, and into Germany, into Poland. That was just about 1,000 miles.
That you were...
Oh, yeah.
You walked?
Yeah, walked.
1,000 miles?
Yeah.
How long did that
take? With little or no food, and minus, some days it was minus 40 degrees centigrade. Now, how I knew that is because in one of these farmhouses there was a temperature gauge, and it's all but minus 40.
How long did
but
that take?
But it's a different... I've actually been, apart from frostbite, I had frostbite in my big toes, which I still suffer from now, and I had two lovely white balloons on my ears as frostbite. But I felt colder in this country. Now the reason is because in our country it's the dampness is the killer here. You get anything associated with dampness, it intensifies, exacerbates the situation. And it's like heat. Now 120 here, you couldn't live. Now, on the desert, we were there every day, 120. No problem. All right, you could fry an egg on the steelwork. No problem at all. Literally. We've done that several times. We used to get them from the Bedouins, these eggs, and fry on the steelwork without any doubt. But this is the trouble. In this country, it's the humidity and what have you that exacerbates any temperature, plus or minus. And this is it. Anyhow... Oh, we did lots of things as a result of, we thought very cleverly, two of us to escape one time, it came to nothing, and unfortunately it came to a frostbite in my feet, because one night we stopped in a mountain haystack, and it's about 8 foot diameter and comes up more or less to a point like a fir tree. And I got right in the middle of that, notwithstanding that. Even my boots were frozen. And I got frozen. Anyway, we were picked up, and happily I didn't mind about that because I knew, the situation. I didn't really, truly realize the situation, that it was far better to stay with what we had and what we didn't than the X quantity. You understand?
Did you all survive that long march? All the POWs?
No.
How many did you lose?
A lot died.
Of the POWs?
Oh yes, a lot died. And a lot, I don't know what happened to them. A lot fell out, they couldn't walk. They'd worn their boots out and they were frostbite to blazes. But there's four of us. I used to organise this and organise it completely, that any barn or whatever we went in, I used to delegate certain things to these four people, and they used to do it. Scout out what it was, see the outhouses, find out whether there's any potatoes, food or whatever, find everything out, and then one man make the area for the bed to the best place, or for the bed, for want of a better word. Fortunately, in some cases, it was straw, so it was comparative luxury. However, we survived that, and mostly we pinched a sledge from one of the farms, and that was absolutely fantastic. We dragged a fellow, must have been dragged in 40 miles on this sledge together with equipment and stuff, and it was so easy to do. But there it is, and then suddenly we came down out of the mountains, and then unhappily the snow started to melt, and we were left without our transport. See, it's horses for courses, isn't it? Damn it. There it is. And that's it. We got to just outside Prague. And we thought we'd make a go for it, but suffice to say we didn't, and we kept on the column. And we got to Regensburg. And we were put out in a small portion of us into different farms with very strong guard. Now, Regensburg marshalling yards were getting very heavily bombed.
This is Germany, of course.
This is Germany.
Yes.
Regensburg is just about 50, 60 miles south of Nuremberg. And they then said, righto, you're going to clear up some of the mess that you made. So we used to march to Regensburg marshalling yard and start clearing ostensibly. We never did a hand's turn, mark it. We went through the motion, mark it, but that was it. We did more damage than most of the Americans did. Anyhow, there was one raid, and it was very dicey. It came on us very quickly. And I said, blow this for a tail, I'm off. And I ran out of through Regensburg's marshalling yards, and just as I reached the outside perimeter, the bombs came down. And I was still running. And I ran through this cemetery. And I got down in this cemetery, and they're blasting this place up, left, right, and what have you around me. And then when that wave was gone, I then ran further out into the country. And there was one fellow with me. And as we were running, I heard this whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. They were still bombing. And I looked up, and there's this super fort. This super fort had a main plane blown off with the artillery. ACAT. And this, the whoosh, I thought, was off this plane. And I went down flat on my face because I thought this main plane was going to come down on us. And I flat on my face, and then a tremendous whack like that. And as I laid down alongside me, absolutely parallel, 6 inches away from me, dead parallel, was a baseball stick. And it went about 4 inches into the ground. And I pulled it out. And it had a name on it, an American name. And it must have been a mascot, unfortunately, an ill mascot for that chappie in the plane, for that plane that got his main plane shot off. And I carried that baseball stick with me back to England, would you believe it? In the hopes that I was going to get this address and write to these people and tell them about this chappie's baseball stick. It had his name printed on it, you know. Anyhow, I thought, blow this for a lark, and we made our way, the two of us, from Regensburg right through. Our troops were coming all the way down. First, I got to an American tank squadron. You couldn't tell what I was from anything in the world, what I was. And they took me to this squadron commander, And there he was, something out of a picture book. You talk about that, not Field Marshal, one of his generals, Patton. Talk about Patton. He wasn't in any way up to this chap. He had pearl handle pistols strapped down to each leg. He had grenades across his chest, both chests, he was there. He had a knife down his boot as well. And I looked, and you know the first words he said to me? He didn't ask me who I was or whatever. He knew that I spoke English. Where are these goddamn crowds? That's all he said. He didn't know what I was. I could have blown him up, anything. Anyhow, suffice to say, he got a PU to take me into Nuremberg. I've never seen a city so devastated. I couldn't believe that that sort of damage could have been effected by anything except an atom bomb. There wasn't a building I saw stood. And I tried to get some communication there, but there was told, go on to Fürth, which is north of Nuremberg. And we went there, and finally, after raiding a farmhouse, a German farmhouse, I had this baseball stick with me. I had it down my trouser because if it was shown to be a weapon, but I kept it because of to use it as a weapon if necessary. And we got to this little farmhouse, and I more or less, said, right, oh, you feed us. And this was it, and that was it. We had tins, we opened tins with, that were pears. And, oh, luxury wasn't in it. And we, God, I had the runs for days, I tell you. Anyway, got this farmhouse. And then I found out that they were then laying on transport north of Fürth. And we went up there, and sure enough, the first, what do they call those planes? They used as transport during the Berlin.
The Dakotas.
Dakotas. And I've flown from there to Brussels.
From Fürth.
Pardon?
From Fürth.
From north of Fürth. It was a little aerodrome there, and a number of us flown to Brussels. Interrogated there for about 4 days.
Who by?
By Americans, American military. And then they laid on a plane force. Now, I had was a jacket, a top jacket and trousers, that's all. And they flew us into with a Lancaster from Brussels. I never felt, and the skipper said, where would you like to sit? I said, on the tail if necessary. I don't mind, as long as I can sit on. No, I said, I'd like to go in the bomb aimer. He said, right, good, get in there. And I flew right across this channel, fairly low. And the channel was absolutely strewn with debris, oil, God knows what. It looked a foul place. Oh, it was so, you could see that there'd been a lot of mischief created down there sometime. And we came to England. I've never seen such greenery in my life, notwithstanding the fact that I was in Germany. There wasn't anything like the green of England. I couldn't get over it. And that's it, when we landed. I forget where I was taken to. Anyway, I got a shower and a haircut, and they wanted, and nothing had been, this was incidentally 2 days before V-Day, and they hadn't got the camp set up. And I said, right. And I knew where I was. But I know I made my way out of there. They wanted me to stop and be interrogated again and have food and have proper uniforms and what do you call them when you go on railways?
A pass.
A pass to get on. I didn't even wait for that. I just jumped ship, got on the railway and got home, and I didn't have a penny piece in my pocket. I got all this way down to my own little paraffin junction, and I still had my baseball stick. I was carrying that on my shoulder like that, and I got off the station, and they knew me at this station. They never bothered about tickets or anything like that, and I didn't bother. I didn't care a damn about it, but I got through, suffice to say. And there was a coal lorry loading up in the little coal yard there. And of course, there were a lot of expletives on seeing me, you know, nice expletives, I must say. And they said, right, out, we'll take you home. They took me home. And I went, I got on the front door, and my dear mother opened it. And I regret it to this day what I said. I said, Mother, you do look old. And I could curse. She did. The war had taken a great deal out of her. And I'd never forget that. And then subsequently, about a month after that, or 6 weeks after that, my father came home. And that was it. And we never talked about it at all. We never talked about anything. We just went fishing and fishing and fishing in the country becks and what have you, you know. And this is what we did.
Did you not talk about it to anyone?
No. In point of fact, when I went back from leave, there was no interrogation, there was no debriefing, no nothing. No, nothing. Although they say people were debriefed. I didn't have any. Anyway, that was it. And finally, I was really shocked physically.
Yes, I was going to ask you what state you were in. You know, physically and mentally.
Oh, mentally harpic. Do you know what that means?
I think it means round the bend.
Clean round the bend.
Clean round the bend.
But ultimately, I realised that I had to work. And I used to allot myself so many hours to do whatever it was. Mend chairs, redo chairs at home, and things like that around the buildings and what have you. And this is what I did. Never went out at all. And
were you frightened of people? You know, why didn't you go out? Were you afraid of meeting people?
I didn't. I was home. I was secure. I was secure, and I didn't want to stray from that at all. And then, of course, familiarity breeds contempt, as you know. And over the weeks and weeks, I was demobbed. I got a cheap shoot and no thank you very much. Good day.
Is that so? Was not interest shown in your case, which must have been very unusual for a POW, bearing in mind the places you'd been taken to, the different... You know, the variety.
They didn't want to know. They didn't want to know. And, of course, I didn't tell them. And they should have known. But I found out that even my public POW record is not available now. I've tried to find it. I can't find the record. But in any case, they could have altered things. I realised that they could have altered things or defaced them or lost them or taken them out. I'd like to have got hold of my first photograph. They completely beheaded me, you know, shaved me completely. And then put a number around my neck on a chain and photographed me. Frontwards and sidewards, you know. So I wish I could have got hold of that photograph. I must have looked like nothing on earth.
Alcatraz.
But there it was. And then after weeks, I slowly got a change of mind, you know. And I wanted to find my friends, and I found out that I lost a lot of friends during the war. A lot were killed, boys and girls. And for some unknown reason, it changed another link in my thinking. And I said, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of this village because this village is not the same. And I knew a fellow in Morecambe. I went up to Morecambe and stayed with him a certain length of time. And then I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I'm going home and I'm going out to South Africa because the people that looked after me in Durban were marvellous people. The wife, the mother of this girl, she ran a small aircraft business, you know, between Durban, PE, Port Elizabeth, Cape Town and Peter Maritzburg and Joburg and what have you. Very small. She had two planes, I think. And the husband was into sugar, which I was very au fait with. And I thought, well, I can do well there. And I had my little car and I drove out and I'd come down the A6 through Buxton and on the A6 driving along and a rabbit ran across the road. And trains of thought, it's amazing how trains of thought can alter your whole life. And I thought back to the rabbit that we caught whilst we were on this march. And I thought of this chap associated with it. And I knew he lived in a part of Manchester. And I got through the box and I thought, I'll turn round and go back. Now, hitherto, I'd phoned my father and told them I was going to South Africa with these people. They didn't know it, but I was going out there. And father made arrangements for me, got me my boat ticket. Of course, you didn't fly those days. Boat ticket and everything. And I turned round on the A6 just beyond Buxton. I went back to Manchester and I found this chappie. And that was it. And I thought, well, I've got to start working for a living, you know. And I then applied for loads of jobs, you know, in my profession as an engineer. And everywhere I got the brush off. I was overqualified and this, that and t'other, plus the fact, I think, I was a southerner. And those days, you know, the boundaries didn't mix at all. And I think I was christened a Cockney with an accent, you know, that sort of thing. And much to suspicion. Anyhow, for weeks and months, I couldn't get jobs and what have you. I thought, there's no other way. I'll apply and get a fitter's job, an engineer, a mechanic, not a mechanic, a fitter's job. I applied for it and got a maintenance fitter's job. I got half a crown an hour. That's what it was. And for some reason or other, I caught the eye of the chief engineer and the works manager, who was the omnipotent man in the business those days. And I did one or two good jobs for them, big jobs that virtually established the factory, to run the factory. It was the main bearing. It was the main bearing on the very big steam engine that drove the big line shafts and also generated all the electricity for the factory. And I was able to run a main bearing on that and get it running in 36 hours. And I never left it for 1 minute during that time. Tea was brought to me and I was still working. And we ran the factory and we got it back.